It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Located in LaGrange, Illinois, Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
It is time for Caffeinated Comics. I am your host, Steven Brown. With me, as always, my co-host,
John Clark.
And today, we have a very special guest in the studio, Carmelo Chimera.
How's it going, everybody?
For our, this will be our toy podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Where we talk about John's problems.
Yes.
Everyone we know has heard rumors about what John Clark's house looks like. I mean, there's like whispered, hushed rumblings around the store.
Only a select few have actually seen.
This is the reason people want to be on the podcast.
We've had
a couple of guests that don't really want to be on the podcast.
Right. They just want to come over and see all your awesome shit.
You are doing a wonderful job, by
the way.
I'm
just trying to steer the ship.
That was true.
I feel like giving you like a Stan Lee-sized compliment. That was a wonderful compliment you gave. Or, you are an incredible retailer and podcast.
What about an action figure size Stan Lee to bring us back around?
Oh, I have an action figure size Stan Lee.
How many Stan Lee action figures do you have?
I had a figure. It was a San Diego comic exclusive that was Spider-Man. You could switch to Stan Lee.
Wait,
and
His head comes off?
Yeah, there's a Peter Parker head, a masked head, and a Stan Lee head, and then he has a jacket. And actually, one of the YouTube videos I have is Stan Soapbox, which you can find under Stan Soapbox, is animating that figure. And I had the bust. Which is also in that video. Yeah. I had the Lee and Kirby bust.
Do you still have those?
No, I ended up selling them.
Nah, you should have kept the Kirby at least.
They were nice. Yeah, it was tough. It was like having one bookend.
Does anyone remember your first action figure?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. John, what do you got?
I go back to Migos. I had Spider-Man, Batman, Robin, Joker, Penguin, and Fonzie.
They made a Fonzie Migos.
That was my Christmas when I was about four.
You got all of those?
I know I had all of them. I don't know if I got them all that Christmas or if I had a couple before and put them in the collection. But that was my Mego collection. And I had the Wayne Foundation, which was like four stories tall and had an elevator. And it was based on like the Marshall Rogers run of Batman when he lived in Wayne Enterprises instead of in the Batcave.
Whoa.
Sweet. I had that. I had a Batmobile. And that's when I was like about four. And then when I was five, six, Star Wars hit. And that's the big gap in my superhero run is that when Star Wars started, I dropped superheroes completely.
Yeah.
And I was only interested in Star Wars until after Empire and Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, and then G.I. Joe came out, and Transformers, and then Secret Wars figures came back. But that's where I go.
You know, I wish I could have heard from my dad on this one because the story of my toy collecting would have been my dad frantically raiding Toys R Us's to try to find me some of this stuff. Because I was born in this like dead zone between the Secret Wars figures of the 80s and the time they brought them back in the early 90s.
The Toy Biz X-Men stuff. Yeah.
There were no action figures.
No, there weren't.
And he would find these little lead figures or he would find these like rubber figures. And I still have them and God bless them because I played with those constantly. My dad probably wasted gallons of gas looking for this stuff for me. And, you know, and then finally, you know, they came out with those. Yeah, I had like the Hulk with the backpack where you press the button and roars.
I had a Punisher one that did that.
Yep, like the Punisher one.
There was a Venom one that said, I want to eat your brain. And they had
that.
It's adorable for all the kids at home.
For the kids.
Yep. Yeah, for the chillins, you know.
Yeah.
And
Toys R Us, as soon as you walk in.
Yeah, those are the ones I remember. Really quick on the heels of that, though, is when the 90s cartoons started, and I was still right there for that.
Yeah, so, X-Men, Spider-Man, X-Men, Batman.
Yeah, and they all had figure lines, and that's really what I got into.
Yeah, that was a real boom, because when in that late 80s, I was about the age where I was supposed to put them down anyway, because I was starting to enter high school. And Star Wars had ended, and G.I. Joe had gone into a really weird kiddie place, and Secret Wars and Superpowers didn't last. So I spent a lot of high school with my figure collecting looking for Superpowers and Secret Wars that were still on the pegs of KB Toys. So like Peg Warmers for 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And Ninja Turtles, because Ninja Turtles was really the only comic book line there was in the late 80s. I mean, it was based on the kiddie cartoon, but I had all four Turtles and Casey Jones and Shredder and the main comic characters. And it really isn't until the Tim Burton Batman movie that they started to come back. And that line was only Joker, Batman, and Bob the Goon.
You know, my brother and I were just reminiscing over the weekend about our Batman Returns and our Batman Animated Series figures. We missed the first Batman. We had a few of them, but man, I had every weird painted Batman. I had the blue Batman, the silver disco Batman. It's
like jungle paint Batman.
I didn't make up that disco ball suit. He's got like
I've got
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. We were on eBay the other night, and I've never seen my brother emote that much.
I don't think that's what the package calls it, though.
No, it does. It's like solar suit Batman or some nonsense. But we were going crazy looking for all these things, you know, that we used to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great movie. I was just looking for the Batman animated figures again because I had lost them all. They actually ended in a bad online sale where I sold them, shipped them, and the guy took his PayPal back. So it still kind of hurts.
Yeah.
So I think about going back. And the funny thing was right before you got your car, we were looking at. I just got Mattel's latest Batman Unlimited figures, so Dark Knight Returns and the Batman of Zur-En-Arr. From the Grant Morrison RIP line, and I was saying how hilarious it is that after making fun of all the rainbow Batmans, I was really excited to get a red, yellow, and purple Batman just because Grant Morrison told me to.
Yeah.
He's like, he's the ugliest Batman in the world, and you should buy him.
But he's got like...
Yes. That was excellent.
Yes,
he's like homeless Batman,
Grant Morrison.
And he's got like a baseball bat. Batman.
He came with a baseball...
He's
oh
got
my
it.
God.
John's going to get it.
He's pulling it out
he's
right
got
now.
Like a
I'm
going
to play with it the rest of the podcast. Look at this. This is glorious. Oh my God, he's got the stitching. This is fantastic.
Yeah, I think by the time
it's pretty cool.
By the time this airs, this should be out the store.
Well, let me ask you this, John. Both you and I shared stories that involved a gap in our collecting then.
Yeah.
So when did you get back into it, and what led to this room that I'm sitting in right now, this wonderland of toys?
Yeah, a lot of it is because of that gap, because when, as I said, after the Migos, Star Wars killed Mego even as a company. So there was nothing else but Star Wars and then G.I. Joe. And when I got into comics, by about 11, 12, which I've said before on the show, was around that Secret Wars era.
Yeah.
And I was dying for superhero figures. And Secret Wars was only like 8 figures.
Yeah.
They only made Wolverine. And I remember as a kid dreaming of, like, this sounds ridiculous now, dreaming of there being a Cyclops figure and a Colossus figure.
Yeah. So that's crazy.
By the time they came out when I was in college, I was like, oh, I never got the chance to get this, so I should get this. And that has kind of driven me to the next couple of decades of like, well, they never made Carnage before, and they never...
Right.
And I did have a moment about 10 years ago. It didn't slow me down. It was my friend Joe. I remember one time he gave me a Venom, and I was really excited. I'd been looking for a while, and then I held in my hands, and I just sighed. And he's like, what's the matter? I go, are we going to spend the rest of our lives playing the same characters over and over again? He went, yeah.
Yeah. Like, why the hell wouldn't we?
Well, so, what else would we do?
Yeah, so it was always like, oh, now I have the chance to get these. Like when Toy Biz did Lord of the Rings. You know, I read Lord of the Rings when I was 12. I saw the animated Hobbit when I was 5. And again, I used to do Lord of the Rings with Jawas and R2-D2.
Nice.
and be like, I'm a Jawa looking for the ring because I'm short.
I think that was something where you...
That is extremely discriminatory towards short people. I bet Steven's very funny.
When I was a kid, I did the same thing. I must have got like Star Trek action figures from like Toys R Us or something. Like, and I never watched Star Trek. And they had guys in blue shirts with like badges. I'm like, oh, these are cops. So then those were the cops that would like shoot at Spider-Man and like the Scorpion.
Oh, that's cool.
As I was playing with like my Daily Bugle playset. We just mixed everything. So it's like we'd look for like guys in suits to be gangsters for like Two-Faces thugs.
When I was
stuff.
A little kid, I like named the shelves over my dresser. I had a dresser that I didn't put clothes in. It was just full of action figures. And then I had shelves above that, which were all my playsets. And it had the Death Star. And it had like the Hoth Battle Station and Dagobah and the Creature Cantina. I guess at that point they're really, and I had the Well of Souls from Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I called that when I was like 8. I called that Star City, and it was a place where all the good guys lived together.
That's awesome.
And then in the other corner of the room, I had like Darth Vader's Star Destroyer and like the Cobra tanks, and that's where all the bad guys were together.
Nice.
And they would just fight, and sometimes, and usually, I would keep the lines separate. Like if I was playing G.I. Joe, I would play G.I. Joe. If I was playing Star Wars, I would play Star Wars. But there was always black suited Spider-Man.
He was just always mixing it up.
Well, Spider-Man's good at team ups.
He is.
So he would.
He's my favorite team up character.
He would always be like on the hovercraft of G.I.
That's
Joe
crazy.
And just webbing Cobra guys.
Yeah, it's something I remember. Because that was a big part of it, I think, is you being a kid. And we mixed everything. Me and my brother, it was mostly me and my older brother played with like the action figures and stuff. And we just mixed every guy together, like all the DC, Marvel, everybody. And then and God forbid I ever remember this stuff, like this, because everything had to happen for like a reason. It was all stories we had explained to team ups. Like, yep. We were writing better comics than either of those companies will ever in their lives produce. And if I didn't have such a horrendous memory, like, I'd be a millionaire right now. That's I'd be writing the best crossover stories you've ever read.
That's actually what got me into writing comics in the 90s was I was in college, my band broke up, and that was like the super serious band where we were going to get a record contract. So yeah. I had this like midlife crisis at 19. What am I going to do with my life? Because God knows I can't relax for a second.
Right.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have had 15 podcasts.
Right, yeah, we wouldn't have done all the podcasts.
But I was talking to my best friend at the time, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe I'm not going to make it in music. What am I going to do? And he was like, you know, whenever you tell me like stories that you think up with the figures on your shelf, they're always good. He's like, why don't you write comic books? And I was like, oh, yeah, you could do that.
That's
and
a job. Somebody does that.
Yeah, and I spent the 90s, you know, I did some independent comics and spent most of my time trying to break into Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
At one of the worst comic book crashes in history.
Right, yeah. You were like, trying to break in when everyone else was getting kicked out.
Everyone else was trying to find another job to feed their family.
It's interesting that your experience professionally in comic books goes back toward action figures, because I think that's the same for me. It sounds like a lot of that for Steven too, like being imaginative with these figures. It really kind of gives me like a lightning rod for my creativity as I sort of channel them into these things and like, oh, like... It got me into collecting again. It got me into imagining the stories. It's partly why I then started shopping and later working at a comic book store in Oak Lawn. So it really does come back to the toys for me anyway.
Yeah, I think there's something about toys. And I know the market's really getting eaten up by video games. And comic fans are older, and it seems like most of them are really focused on the artwork and the overall storyline. But there's something about having that character in three dimensions in your hand that just makes it more real. Even though it's a 6-inch little plastic version of Batman, for me, it's always been more real than the DVD of the animated series or the hardcover of The Dark Knight Returns, because that's on paper and that's what somebody else told me he was.
Right.
And there's unlimited potential when I'm just holding Batman. And he can do whatever I want him to do.
Yeah, I think it is a weird thing, because when I was a kid, you come up with all these stories, and then I probably played with action figures way longer than I should have. I remember we were probably in like high school.
We were supposed
to
stop?
I was still playing with like Godzilla figures
and
stuff.
Well, I'm 40 now.
I'm playing with Batman of Zurinar right now.
But then I remember like, all right, well, I went to college and then I stopped collecting figures. We sold all our Ninja Turtles and everything. Like, we got rid of all this stuff. And then we were doing the podcast last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever, and we went down into John's basement and we were pulling out all the bins of all his Marvel, what are those little...
Which no longer smells like cat pee.
Thank God. Because that's why we were able to be down there for so long. What are those G.I. Joe size guys? Marvel Legends? Is that those?
Yeah. Marvel Universe.
The Marvel Universe. We were pulling all these Marvel Universe figures, and it was like, I had like a little moment where I was just like sitting there like, I got all the Avengers. I had like Vision and Captain Marvel and all these guys, and it was just like, this is awesome. Like, I hadn't done that in probably 8-9 years.
You know, and that's all I do. I don't play with anything I buy, and I open everything I buy. I don't save anything in the package. But basically, all I really do is pose it, see how it works, and then I put it with the other ones to see how they mesh together.
Yeah, yeah, there's like a weird thing with just seeing all... It's like, that's why I like team-up books. That's why I like team books, where it's just like you seeing all these guys together. There's something about the Justice League teaming up to fight villains and the Avengers getting together to stop Thanos or whatever. It's like, that's what I want to see in comics. And when you can see it with like little figures and stuff, it's like that much cooler. It's like real life.
Yeah. You know? And right behind us on a shelf is Batman and every one of the villains that Mattel has made in the last 6 years. And I loved being able to see everybody, and basically every villain I see, I can go, oh, well, there's 10 great stories I remember, and here's three I can come up with each of them.
Yeah.
And it is, but it does go to that OCD where every time I look at it, I'm like, where's the ventriloquist? When are they going to make the ventriloquist? And then I go on thefoosh.com and go, when are they going to make the ventriloquist? Send.
Yeah.
My little brother and I have really taken up customizing as a hobby, and it's kind of cool to see like the customs I made in high school or grade school versus the ones I can do now, mostly because of like better equipment. You know, like I used to cut these things apart with a scalpel. Now I have a rotary tool. Mm-hmm. I used to try to sculpt with hot glue, and now it looks like shit. Now I've got Ave's epoxy sculpt, and I can work with that pretty well. You know, and we do this pretty much every week, and I customize. We do what you do. If we say, why didn't they make this figure? We go and we do it. You know, I'm trying to do a 6-inch Tim Burton Batman, because I'm just been like killing me that they haven't done this.
I really hope that after the Adam West line, which, as awesome as it looks, I think will only last about a year, because how many characters are going
to
get out of it?
They could go to the deep tracks, but I don't expect them to sell
no.
very maybe as Maddie series. Exclusives, though, like the Golden
maybe.
Pharaoh and stuff. I don't
but
know.
What I'm hoping is the way Batman 66 is kind of the relaunch of the Christopher Nolan movie masters, I'm really hoping that in 2014, which I believe will be the 25th anniversary of the Tim Burton movie.
Right.
I'm hoping at that Toy Fair, Mattel will say, we're done with Adam West. Now we're going to do Tim Burton.
It'd be awesome. It'd be terrific.
Yeah, you figure like Batman's a good where it's like there's so many different versions. They'll always, every year.
And it always sells.
Yeah, that's the thing is it always, you got two bins full of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like they'll always be doing Batman's different versions, different interpretations of the character, different villains.
And that's,
you know?
And that's an interesting thing. That's a question I always have. And Carm, you can answer this because I don't have an answer. In my head, I always wanted just like a great Batman and like a Batman that I would consider to be my Batman. And, you know, I feel that way about most of the major characters. Like in a Star Trek line, I want my Picard, you know. But I keep buying every version.
Yeah.
You know, right now the Frank Miller Batman is in front of everything. And every now and then I'll swap that out with the Greg Capullo version or the Dick Sprang version or the Neil Adams version. And part of me is like, why do I have 20 Batmans?
Yeah, it's like, what's the definitive Batman?
Yeah, and maybe it's that I can't decide because I like every version.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know what you're thinking because all of these characters are open to interpretation and reinterpretation, and that's kind of the nature of comic books, is different writers, different artists. That's why I don't mind when movies and stuff deviate from the comics, because it's someone else's turn at it. Same with the figures, I think, is we all bring to each character our vision of them. And like you said, now you've got this three-dimensional version of it. So it's very natural to think, well, what's my favorite Batman cowl? My favorite Batman belt? Kind of, you know, getting away from Batman, I think I see it with Spider-Man all the time. And it's so simple, but man, like, which eyes do you like the best? Yeah. I don't know about you, but I know the Romita eyes and I know the Ditko eyes and not the McFarland eyes. And it's the same thing. You kind of ask, and now that you got the figures, you can see the parts. I swap the parts out. I've done this with different characters where I say, well, hell, I want Spider-Man to have underarm webbing, but I don't want him to have the Ditko eyes. I want the Romita eyes. And I do this all the time.
Yeah, I do that too. If it's easy and it's clean, if I have to start using epoxy and glue, I usually back off. Yeah. And most of my repainting is Sharpie. I worked at Art Asylum for a little while. I think I've talked about this. And I was their staff writer, and there was only so much they needed me to write. So they were like, we always need painters. And I got fired after like 4 days.
This is just like, your skill set just doesn't extend to painting.
Yeah, and I was working on Venom.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get it. I couldn't get like the white legs of his chest right. And I was like, this is not where my talents lie. But I've
had to paint the white legs and then use a felt marker to draw in the interior.
The black,
lines.
Yeah.
And that's how you can do those kind of closely grouped ones. But you know, painting is my favorite part of making the figures. You know, I enjoy assembling them to make them still poseable, but I always look forward to the painting. It's always about getting the figure to the point where I can prime it and paint it, because that's my favorite part.
Yeah, the painting is where I stop, because I always have a problem with custom figures is that you can't use that factory sealant that figures use.
Well, I have. Yeah. I have. You buy the matte sealant that bonds to plastic chemically. It works great.
Really?
Double coated Krylon brand. I use the same Krylon brand bonds to plastic for the primer. And then you can use, you know, if you use a flat gray to prime it and then paint it a base color. And if you use combinations of washes and dry brushing over and over again, you can get any texture, any depth to the color you want. You know, I just did an Arrow from the new television show and I mixed in a little metallic green to the base, but then I washed him over and over again a dark green. So he's got this kind of wet leathery look. It sticks to the Krylon primer, and then you seal it with the Krylon matte. The other thing is you don't want to paint just on the factory sealant, because dust, debris, little things get caught microscopically in the figure's finish. So the first thing you want to do is in hot water, soak them in hot soapy water, dish soap, and brush them down with a toothbrush and kind of wear that factory sealant away. Not so much that you discolor it, because you can't see the sealant. But once you've done that, then the Krylon will bond to it, and all your paint apps will stick better.
I think Carm would have not been fired by Art Asylum after 4 days.
Probably not. He probably would have gone really far there.
Yeah, my favorite thing to customize, actually, and this goes back to Batman, which actually, when I look at everything, it's probably the bulk of my collection. It's definitely the bulk of my comic collection and the bulk of my graphic novel collection, easily. But I think it's probably the bulk of my action figure collection. One of the things I love to do, if you look at some of these, is their Mattel bodies, which are sturdy and very articulated, mm-hmm. but their DC Direct heads, which are way more detailed.
Yeah, you swap heads a lot.
Yeah, so Harley Quinn has a DC Direct head.
I have a
Jim Lee Batman from the All-Star line, which had a very posed body
uh-huh.
that I put on a Mattel body. Yeah. And you're right. It is about finding that perfect version of it.
Nicholas just did that very thing. My 11-year-old brother, who customizes with me, he did the reverse, though. He took this Green Arrow from the New 52 figures, mm-hmm. and he did a head swap with the Mattel version, because the Mattel version had, like, the hood and the goatee.
Right.
And we swapped it, and the reason I share the anecdote is because it goes to your point, which is my brother had, like, a vision of Green Arrow in mind, and it had, like, all of the military look of, like, the comic figure, but it had the hood. And it was a simple boil and pop to switch the heads. And Nicholas has his dream Green Arrow on his shelf now. You know, I think that's your point.
Yeah, and I think the easier customize. Now, Carm, have you gotten into 6-scale figures, 12-inch stuff at all?
You know what? I don't know what it is, but I've never gotten into them. It might have been a price thing when I was younger that I stayed away from.
It's
the
definitely a price
figures.
Thing now.
Yeah, I think it's always going to be a price thing.
Because, I mean, back when you were a kid, it was like a 6-inch figure was $5 and a 12-inch figure is $20. Now a 6-inch figure, and we were talking about this on the last podcast,
crazy,
6-inch figure
yeah.
is $15-$20, but a 12-inch figure is $200.
Yeah, I mean, I look at your Hot Toys on the shelf right now, and they're magnificent. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, for the price of that Batman, you know, a 1989 Batman that looks so freaking cool, I mean, I can go and buy most of the Batmans you have on that Mattel
yeah.
shelf, and I can have all of his rogues galleries, and I'm not too old to play with these things, and I still do.
Well, if you want to talk Hot Toys, we need to go to an expert. So let's talk to Michael Crawford. Mike's been running his website, MWC Toys, for about 15 years or so, and he's become the premier action figure reviewer online. He's now set his sights to higher-end collectibles with the Hot Toy Cast, which launches monthly. He knows pretty much everything about action figures of all ranges and has a lot to bring to the table.
You know, I had started getting back into comic books in the late 80s, and I picked up an action figure here and there, and I was also buying a lot of the stupid McDonaldland Happy Meal toys.
Oh, yeah.
I loved those things back in the 80s. They had so many cool toys. And so I was buying a lot of those and having them as little knickknacks around the house. And then in the early 90s, I started to get back into action figures as they related into specific comics or media that I really liked. And it was really, I remember the Ren and Stimpy action figures were the first ones. My wife actually bought them for me. And they were the first ones that I kept in the package, some of them. And that was sort of the defining moment when it all started going downhill. Yeah, I also really loved all the Playmate stuff at that point. You know, they were doing the Star Trek line, and they were doing a great job with it in the mid-90s. And it wasn't that long after that that the Springfield World of Simpsons came out, World of Springfield for the Simpsons came out. And also, I was, you know, you were just starting to see a revitalization of that 6-scale market. Hasbro was doing a little better job. They were doing some stuff with the Star Wars line that was pretty good.
Yeah, I remember those. That was a pretty wide character selection, too, for a 12-inch line.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you got the Tauntaun and you got some cool beasts in that line. And you also started to see some more of the military figures coming up. You know, there were companies like Dragon and BBI who were in 21st Century who are just starting to tap into the market where they still had pretty weak sculpting and articulation. Bodies were still pretty basic, but they were really starting to look at what they could do with costumes and accessories. And the quality was really starting to step up. And then you saw Sideshow come along in the late 90s and start doing work with licensed figures. And that really was a huge turning point as well.
Would you say you're more of a 6-scale collector now, or are you still as excited about the 6-inch stuff and the 3¾ stuff?
Well, it kind of depends. My stuff tends to be more around licenses, although I will say I've, you know, since I grew up on 6-scale figures back in the 60s and 70s, that they always hold a special place in terms of that style.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it really ends up being a lot about the licenses. And when there are licenses that I love, it really doesn't matter what the scale is. There's 6-inch stuff I really still get into. I mean, I love the whole Masters of the Universe classics that Mattel's been doing. I think Mattel still is doing a good job with some of the DC stuff, even though it can be hard to find when they finally do put it out.
Yeah, I just got my Larfleas and Majermala right before this call. Have you gotten them yet?
Yep, they just came in yesterday or today.
Yeah, the Larfleas is really nice. I was surprised there were no bicep swivels, but other than that,
Yeah, they're doing a good job, I think. But, you know, it seems like, especially over the last 10 years, that a lot of the really cool licenses are getting that 6-scale treatment these days, or the premium formats, as you mentioned. But, you know, NECA is still doing a great job with some of the 6 to 7-inch scale stuff. I thought their Gremlins work this last year was really great. Yeah. You know, the stuff they're doing with ET is really great. So, you're still seeing some of that stuff, but it's just not as... It's not the heyday that it was, you know, maybe 10 years ago when everybody and their brother was producing figures in that scale for every license on their, you know, God's green earth, and you could find them at Media Play and everywhere else, Sam Goody. And
yeah, that's something we were talking about in the studio. What now? I agree, it's really become more of a collector's market, and we're seeing rising prices partially because of that and partially because of the oil crisis. But what do you think it is that's shrinking the market? Because everybody says video games, but, you know, video games were still pretty big 10 years ago.
Yeah, and actually video games seem to be either leveled off and in some cases kind of dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
So, part of it, I think, is the rising prices. I mean, I was just looking at the Despicable Me 2 stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up a bunch of the little slightly articulated PVCs, which are 2 to 3 inches tall. And they're really cute. They're really adorable. They've got about, 15 or 16 different characters out. That would be the kind of thing a kid would eat up at $3 or $4 a piece. But no adult can afford to buy their kid 15 of them at $10 a piece. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, we were just talking about the Marvel Universe line. I was so excited. Because as you said, we're just slightly different in age, where you grew up with the 6-scale. I grew up with the 3 3/4 Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So when Marvel Universe came out, I was incredibly excited. But now the prices are creeping up to like $12-15. They're double the price Marvel Legends were just, 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at the point now where I'm like, I'm just ready to abandon them and stick with these 6-inch stuff.
Yeah, I do think that Hasbro's decision to go with a 6-inch line this year was probably pretty smart. You know, Star Wars collectors have been clamoring for that for years, a really good 6 to 7-inch scale line.
Yeah, and I think that's going to really bridge the gap between Clone Wars ending and the J.J. Abrams Star Wars coming out. I think that's going to keep the collectors excited for the next 2-3 years. And probably when that new movie comes out, I think it's going to be a hard swing back to 3 3/4.
Yeah. But yeah, as we were just talking about rising prices there, yeah, it does. It is concerning, and some of it has nothing to do with the economy. You know, if you look at Hot Toys, I'm very concerned about the rising prices on that line. You're talking about a line where the bodies are pretty much, they've got 4 or 5 different ones they use now, and they're pretty much standardized. Costuming and sculpting is pretty much standardized for them. They do fantastic and amazing work, but we're watching the prices over the last 4 or 5 years rise from $100 to $150 for an average Hot Toys figure to $200 to $250. And it's getting to the point where unless you're very... dedicated fan of a particular character, you're not going to be able to afford this stuff. I was just seeing some of their announcements for Iron Man 3, where they're doing, 5-6 different suits. How the hell is anybody going to be able to buy them?
Yeah, and they're doing them in diecast so they can start pushing them up to 300.
Oh, yeah. I did order that first diecast, and we'll see if it's – I'm having a hard time believing it's worth that kind of scratch, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm waiting until I see the movie. If I absolutely fall in love with Iron Man 3, I'll want that armor. If it's not as great, I'm not going to be willing to plunk down the 300. But I have the same problem. I have a much smaller Hot Toys collection. I only have about 10 or so. And what I'll usually do is when they announce an upgrade, I'll sell my old figure.
Right.
And they usually rise in value so much that it usually pays for the new one and then some. But I just did that with the Christian Bale Batman, and I'm having a hard time now that the new Heath Ledger Joker is about to come out. This is a character that I bought in that version about 2 or 3 times, and I'm just having so much trouble like living up to that $250 price tag.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about the Joker 2.0?
Yeah.
With the diorama. Yeah, there are – I mean, that – sometimes it's very hard to find a reason to spend that money. Like for example, the new T-800 that they did this last year.
Yep.
Yeah, he's great, and he's got some cool accessories, and there are some advantages. You know, he's got a real leather outfit this time, and there are some nice things about it. But if you have the previous one, it's a real hard sell, at least in my opinion. But when I did get the Joker, I have to admit, because I have all the Hot Toys Jokers so far, I have to admit that because of the diorama, this one is such a perfect costume. It fits him so well, and it's so well tailored. You set it next to the first Joker that they did with the purr's eyes, and that was an amazing Joker. But this one is just so much better in terms of the costume that you don't want to dress him down. You don't want to take the coat off and leave him in the vest for the diorama. So now you kind of got a reason to have both Jokers. You can have the new one in his perfect costume dressed fully, and then you can take the older one and put him in the diorama, take off his coat, leave him in the vest, and actually display them both, which is what I'm going to do. So once in a while, you know, that's one of those examples where I do think, because they added the diorama of the police station, the interrogation room, that they added something that you can really use with some of the previous versions. But yeah, most of the time, it's a hard sell. I mean, I'm really, really looking forward to everything that's coming out with that 66 Batman.
Yeah.
Whether it's Mattel or Hot Toys or Mezco is doing some stuff, it doesn't matter to me. I'll just buy any of it.
Yeah, I cannot wait for the Mattel stuff. And I know Hot Toys is showing us a Batmobile, so I have to assume there's 12-inch stuff coming.
Well, and if you think about it, one of the things I miss is some of the variety that we used to get. You know, if you think about even back in the late 90s and early 2000s, you were getting so much variety in licenses, so much unusual choices from NECA and McFarlane and Mezco, and you were seeing stuff in that 6 to 7 inch scale that you never really expected to ever see.
Yeah.
Palisades. I really miss Palisades. I thought the Muppet line was probably one of the best lines ever produced, and it's a pity that they went under.
Yeah, I have everything from that line, and it's they're all in my son's room now with all the play sets, but they are on very high shelves.
Yeah.
So if he wants to play with them, I need to go in and take them down.
Somebody asked me the other day, they sent me an email and said they really missed my premium format statue reviews. I haven't done one in quite a while. And I said, well, you know, that's because I haven't bought one in quite a while. There's not the variety. If I want another Star Wars or another Marvel, yeah.
Yeah.
But there isn't, you know, there isn't the kind of variety. I'm sitting in a room right now where I have 36 of them up on the walls. One shelf, there's a Terminator next to a Wolfman, Lon Chaney Wolfman. There's the Creature from the Black Lagoon next to John Wayne, next to Spike, next to Jack Sparrow. So I like that variety. I like that uniqueness in the licenses. And I get kind of tired when they do another Star Wars or another Marvel character over and over and over.
Yeah, I think that was one of the reasons my favorite six scale figures from last year were the Enter Bay Men in Black.
Yeah.
Just because we've never seen them before. Yep. You know, and granted, like, the likenesses are perfect. And granted, they're just two guys in suits. But it's like, it's just virgin territory. And I'm still holding out hope that Sideshow will be able to squeeze out a couple more Indiana Jones 6-scale stuff. But
yeah, that would be nice. I mean, I'd like another, even another premium format would be nice if they would. Everybody needs a Marion at some point here.
Yeah, right? we also never got a Last Crusade Indy.
No,
we had the other three. When I saw the speeder bike for $800, I was like, "Well, that Last Crusade Indy is going to be Indy and Henry Senior in the motorcycle."
But yeah, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, that would be beautiful. That's also my soft spot. Is Indiana Jones was when the Crystal Skull came out. I was so super excited because there was so much Indiana Jones stuff. And I grabbed it all just fearing that it would all disappear. And then within 4 months, it all disappeared. Yeah. But those are the things now I try to hang on to forever. And, you know, because they're plastic, part of me thinks I can.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish there were more prop replicas, too. I get disappointed. I like prop replicas, and I have a few of the indie ones. And I wish that we'd see some more of the indie stuff. Maybe the Stones, for example, or a few more things from those films. Because the Indiana Jones license really has a ton of props that really lend themselves to that.
Yeah, I've always found it strange about Indiana Jones that it's so beloved and it's so huge in popularity, but it always seems to go under the radar. Like, I always felt Lucasfilm didn't pay much attention to it because Star Wars took all their time. But when they did do all the Crystal Skull stuff, it came and went so quickly that I think, like, after you get Indy himself, it's kind of hard to find iconic things from those movies because it's like dusty tanks and guys dressed up as Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of really crazy iconic looks other than Indy himself. What are you looking forward to most? Is it more Hot Toys releases? Is it the whole Batman 66 line?
Well, yeah, like we said, the Batman 66 stuff I'm really looking forward to. I want to see what Mattel does. On the Hot Toys side, I wish they would get the other two Batmobiles out, right? We've seen the Batman Returns Batmobile, and we've seen the 66 Batman Batmobile. And, you know, then we haven't had a peep on either one. So I would really like it if they would get those rolling along here.
Yeah, and the Bat seems to rear its head every couple of months.
Yeah, you know, I heard some more rumors about that just a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, it keeps rearing its head. I don't know, but let's face it. You know, originally we thought, you know, there's been other things we never thought that they could possibly do, like the Ironmonger.
Yeah,
right, back when Iron Man first came out, everybody said, "Oh, they'll never do an Ironmonger." Even they said, "Wow, it's awfully large and awfully expensive." And we finally got one.
Yeah, it took until almost Iron Man 3, but that had been popping around for a while. And that's the thing about Hot Toys is they'll announce something, they'll show you a work in progress, they'll announce a license, and then it'll go away for a couple of years sometimes. And then and then either just show up or not. So you can never quite pin your hopes too highly on them. But I will say I've yet to see a really disappointing figure from them.
Sometimes I'll find something that I'm not completely thrilled with in terms of the quality maybe of the sculpt compared to the price point. Or they'll cheat a bit on the accessories. You know, there's been a few of those in the last year where you're paying upward of $200 and you're not really getting the same level of accessories or costume that you used to get. But for the most part, you know, I don't know how they do the production paint. I mean, it's just outstanding. Even Enterbay has a hard time matching it at times, and they're really the two that nobody else comes close. And I can only assume that there's something to do with someone selling their soul to Satan over that, because there's no way that I don't know how they found that magic bullet, but that's just outstanding, and it really sets them apart. You know, I always said for years, you can have a great sculpt, but it all depends on the paint. A great paint job can make even a mediocre sculpt look fantastic, and an awful paint job can ruin the best sculpt in the world. Sideshow had that problem for years.
Yeah.
You would see a sculpt that they would do when it was unpainted, it was an uncanny likeness. And then they'd throw paint at it, like from a paint balloon or something. And
yeah, remember the Bond figures had this awful caked on makeup.
Yeah, like, it was just... Yeah, and so Hot Toys is always something, you know. They really do right now have their finger on the pulse of collectors, so to say, speak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some other stuff. I'm really looking forward to see what else Playmates does with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I thought they did a fantastic job with the re-release of those.
Yeah, the four turtles themselves are just beautiful. The articulation is incredibly functional.
Yep.
And they're really solid, and they were $9. You know, we got them all for my son, and we got them, and the sewer playset, which is, I think, to this day, the biggest playset I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the Castle Grayskull, too. We'll see how Mattel does with that thing.
Yeah, we pre-ordered that. I went overboard this Christmas. I had avoided the Masters of the Universe line for years, and then my son discovered He-Man on Netflix, and right around Black Friday when Matty Collector had the sale, and I was like, well, he obviously needs everybody. And so he ended up getting like 25 Masters of the Universe Matty Collector figures from Santa, and a week later discovered Ninja Turtles, and they all went in the box.
Yeah. The Turtles, Playmates did a fantastic job with them. And it'll be interesting to see if we get some stuff from some of the, you know, from the films this year. If we get anything interesting from the Star Trek side, if we get anything, it's always hard to tell. You'll see a little here and there at Toy Fair. You'll see something at San Diego. But until you actually get it in hand, you know, production stuff, it's always kind of hard to tell if it's actually going to live up to what you were hoping for.
Yeah, and the one thing about Star Trek that's always bothered me is, other than the old Playmates Next Generation Bridge, which is maybe the best playset I've ever seen, we've never gotten really good bridge playsets.
Yep.
And I've always felt that a Star Trek line is incomplete unless you can put them all on the bridge. So maybe Star Trek Into Darkness is where we finally get a good, well, if not classic, then just a classic crew bridge. What's the one toy you missed that still kills you, whether it was something you couldn't afford as a kid and haven't seen since, or something that didn't come out?
Well, let's see. There's stuff that I wish had made it out. There's remember the old Earthworm Jim line from Playmates? There were some great figures in that line, including the queen, whatever the hell her name was, mm-hmm. With the huge larva butt. There's a series of figures that I wish we would have seen. That was a kind of a fun line from Playmates. There's more out of the Muppets line. You know, they had a lot of stuff that they showed towards the end, including Sesame Street.
The whole Sesame Street line. All we got was the Super Grover.
Yeah, that was really disappointing that we didn't really get much of that. I actually have probably the prize of my collection is I have the wax sculpt for Bert.
Oh,
that never got made into a mold.
Is he a two up or is he 6 inches?
No, he's 1-to-1. They were sculpting those at scale. He's sort of one of my prized possessions. That was disappointing. As a kid, you know, there's stuff I wish I could go back and get now that I didn't get as a kid. I was a huge Mark's Best of the West fan mm-hmm. as a kid, and I still have probably a dozen of my figures from then with their accessories. But there's stuff I didn't get back then that I wished I had, like Jeb Gibson and a number of others that now you can't touch for $100,000. And, you know, it's like, well, so much for that.
Yeah. I am fairly restrained on my collections except for action figures.
Yeah.
I mean, I was, when you guys first opened, I wasn't buying any monthlies anymore. I was getting digital comics from Comixology. And I have rebuilt a lot of my back issues, but that's because the back issue market is dead. So you can go to a con and get them 3 for $1, 10 for $1.
Insane.
Which is why I have long boxes
again.
Didn't
you say you just got a Fantastic Four? Which one were you telling me about?
I just got a Fantastic Four from Half Price Books number 44. Joe Sinnott, the Introduction of the Inhumans.
It's the first, what the hell is it? Gorgon.
Yeah, the gentleman's name is Gorgon. With another blurb. What a way to honeymoon.
Whatever that means.
For $7.
No kidding.
I got angry when I saw it.
Sweet Christmas, John.
Yeah, it was just there. I was going through like the dollar Batmans, and I was like, I have all these. And I walked by, and there's a Fantastic Four 44.
That's awesome. Crazy.
You know, I've got another question then about action figures, since we've talked a little bit about their evolution so far. Mm-hmm. You talked about the difference in prices. I want to take this opportunity to air a grievance that I think we both share. I remember being 15, 16 when Marvel Legends first came out. And I spent $7.99, and it came in plastic clamshell packaging, so if you didn't want to open them, they looked great. They all came with a comic, and it came with a base that had at least as much density as the figure itself.
And when the base went away, it was a Build-A-Figure.
And even the Build-A-Figure...
And they all came with, like, accessories, right?
But the Build-A-Figures... Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the Build-A-Figures used to be 15 inches tall.
They were
Giant
huge.
Man. It was Apocalypse.
I've got
it
a Galactus up to my knee that I built from Marvel Legends Wave 11. I
feel like you're complaining. I got Galactus up to my knees.
I'm up to my knees in Galactus.
They're eating planets all over the place.
I don't have enough planets to feed my Galacti.
I just brought home 20 planets from the Jewel Osco. I'm down to 2. Stupid Galactuses.
But seriously, like... Now
Miss
I go,
Grant.
And I bought this new Iron Man line with this build an Ironmonger. He'll be, you know, 6-7 inches.
Yep.
And I spent $17.99 a figure. I didn't get a base. I didn't get a comic book. I mean, I'm lucky they didn't kick me on the ass on the way out of Target.
Well, we were talking about that on the last podcast. That's half of what's killing it is that plastic prices have gone up because they're made out of oil.
Right.
So that's a big part of it. But also a big part of it is that Marvel owned Toy Biz, so they didn't have a licensing fee on top of those Marvel Legends.
Okay, that explains a lot.
And once they went to Hasbro, like, immediately the comic books dropped out.
Right.
And then the Build-A-Figures got regular size, and then they did less waves. And I think Marvel Universe was kind of an attempt to bridge that gap. Because Hasbro, as you know, has always made G.I. Joe and Star Wars at 3 3/4, and they've always done really well.
Which they're finally making 6-inch Star Wars figures, they announced.
Yeah, finally they're going the other way. And I remember when that was announced, I was at the Toy Fair where that was announced. And everybody was saying, oh my God, Star Wars Marvel Legends. And it's taken 6-7 years. And really, I think the only reason they're doing that is because the sales on the 3 3/4 are slowing down. They're obviously not going to give up the license. They're waiting for the J.J. Abrams movie to peak again.
Right.
And this is a way to keep people interested for the next couple of years until that next movie
comes
out.
It'll work because I passed that movie will take a minute. But I didn't mean to cut you off. You were saying about the figures before.
Well, that's it, is that it's getting so much more expensive.
Right.
The figures are getting more expensive. And like comics, whereas when you guys started, it was probably $1.25.
Yeah.
You know, or a dollar. And now they're $3, $4.
$3.99 is the new norm.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with the 12-inch figures, is that these companies have figured out if you appeal to the core fan base, they will pay whatever...
Basically, whatever they
ask. Whatever you ask.
Yeah, these prices are a reflection of monopolistic IP laws. But I think that's my real problem. You kind of answered it when you brought in the licensing. I hadn't thought of that Toy Biz to Hasbro switch. But my problem was, I understand that there's oil involved in the plastic. So let me get this straight, though. You now use less oil to make my figure because you cut my base out.
Mm-hmm.
But you've still more than doubled my price. And has anything else in this, please tell me, has anything in this country doubled in price in the last 6 years?
Like comic books?
Yeah, besides comic books, which even that I start to wonder because paper and ink aren't.
Gasoline.
Gasoline. No, not in the last 6 years it's doubled.
But it's up to $4.
I mean, no one thinks the price of gas is going down, but what I'm saying is the amount of the leap. So I'm paying more than twice the price for way less figure. And they're finally starting to look better. But when Hasbro first picked it up, they made a conscious choice. They said this publicly. Look, we can give you paint apps or we can give you sculpts. We're giving you sculpts. And those early Hasbro Marvel Legends look great, have shitty paint sculpts.
And they don't have a lot of articulation either.
No, they really don't. And they were okay for me because I enjoyed painting them. Like they did this. They did Thor with the Odin Force. Looks awesome. No paint. It was
I remember that.
I painted him. He looks great. But... And man, I tell you, I still feel like I'm getting gypped.
They re-released him too with the Thor movie,
and they actually painted him this time. Yes. He looks awesome. So you know, but then again, here I am, and I'm complaining, but I keep forking over the money. So
I know. Well,
I'm not really doing anything to help myself.
I'm doing the same thing with Hot Toys, because Hot Toys just keeps getting better and better and better, where they just keep making it more realistic.
Well, that might explain the price difference with Hot Toys. I can see that. You know, it's the low price model, the 6-inch model, that I start to wonder about. Those 12-inch figures, as I'm staring at them on your shelf, look gorgeous. They're just getting better and better. I feel like you're getting the value for your money.
That's what it is. It's a lot of money, but you're getting that value. And like I said, it's now or never. It's like if you really love Iron Man, this is the best version you're ever going to have.
Yeah.
And you know, 20 years from now, not if Hot Toys doesn't redo them over and over again. 20 years from now, it'll still be the best Iron Man version that's ever out there. And it is weird. I think it comes down to how many they think it can sell, how mass market it is. So I'm starting to think, okay, we can sell 1 million Ninja Turtles because kids are into it again. My son's really into Ninja Turtles, and he did not care about the old show.
Yeah.
Whereas Batman of Zur-En-Arr, they're selling to mostly people who bought the story arc. Yeah, the people who bought Batman RIP and saw Batman Zur-En-Arr in it. In fact, I tried to convince Steven really about why the character existed before the podcast. Didn't persuade him at all.
No, not even a little bit. And you know what? This toy's cool, but it's still not enough to explain what the fuck is going on with this.
Someone did try to explain that story to me, and it sounded pretty good, but I think Grant Morrison maybe is playing in the wrong sandbox.
I read it twice, and Dave Gonzalez gave me the best explanation, and I'm still not convinced. But I had to have it. It came up on Big Bad Toy Store.
You know,
both of them were up.
It's Batman. It's, you know, it's what else you need?
It's
you
know? A real Batman, which, you know, and... But there is no stopping it.
No, there's really not.
And the big problem I have, which toy companies do from time to time, is changing the scale.
Oh, it drives me crazy. This is the biggest reason I customize, is because I'll get a scale I like, and then I don't have the figure I want in that scale. For instance, I got all these great movie action figures in 6-inch, and a couple years ago they were like, fuck it. And now you can only get your 6-inch figures as Walmart exclusives.
Right.
I still don't have a 6-inch Black Widow, and you'd think
they
that I have
make
bigger.
Her.
Oh, I know, and you'd think I'd have bigger things to worry about, but this is what keeps me up at night.
Right. It's like that law school or studying
none of that bullshit. Forget my bills, the store. I don't have Scarlett Johansson in a 6-inch scale on my shelf, and it's driving me bonkers.
Well, it drives me crazy because I have that. I have this the Playmates Star Trek Next Generation bridge, which is also in the room, and the bridge is fantastic. It's probably one of the best plays that has ever been made. The figures are goofy because they're very Playmates, they're very Ninja Turtles. Now Diamond has made 100 Star Trek characters that look beautiful, but they are in 7-inch scale. And if you put Picard in that Next Generation,
he's a giant.
His head will pop out of the top of it.
Right.
Yep, that's about what it'll
happen.
That's about the size of it.
It was interesting, too, because in the late 90s, there became the scale war where everything was 5 inches.
Yep.
Like after Star Wars had died out, people stopped doing 3 3/4, and Toy Biz started doing 5. Everybody did 5. Then McFarlane decided to make his own toys. And he
fucking made, McFarlane
once
again.
He came on the scene, decided to make them 6-inch just so they would be bigger. And then 6-inch became 7-inch. And then Toy Biz started making their figures 6-inch, which drove me crazy because they started doing characters you waited for. Like the Jim Lee Jean Grey never came out in the 5-inch, so she came out in the 6-inch. Yep. And you had to start all over again. And then everybody started getting up to 7. Then Star Wars came back and everything dropped down to 3 3/4.
Now, here's a question. I had a lot of the X-Men 90s figures.
Yes, they're worthless.
No, I know they're worthless. I know I don't have anything worth any money. But so the cartoon ones, you know, Sock Ups pressed the little button, his eyes light up, and he had the head sock thing going on. Did they ever make a Jean Grey from that show in that scale?
No, that's what I'm saying.
That's what you're saying, right?
They made her as part of the Onslaught Wave, and that's when they bumped up.
Okay.
They made Phoenix.
Because I always thought that was weird, as I didn't have a... whatever scale that is.
And that's what really drives me crazy. There's always one member of every team that's always left out. Whether they're not popular. Yeah, they do it to stretch out the line.
But then the line dies out before they get to make all the reject figures, and then you and I are left shaking at night wondering why I don't have Jubilee on my shelf with my Jim Lee X-Men.
Right, because Mattel made DC Universe last 20 waves. Now it's a Mattel exclusive. The retailer doing New 52, so we can consider that a different line. But if they had done the entire Justice League in 2 waves, it would not have lasted a second year, because then it's like you can't do the big 7 in 2 waves, and then your 3rd wave is Gem and Mysterio and Amethyst. And nobody. And that's what one of the things that killed the line, even though I liked it, was they did a whole line of Rainbow Lanterns. Orange Lantern, Skittle Lex Luthor, Lantern and Yellow Lantern's Scarecrow, and it didn't sell. And they were never able to recover from that. And so when New 52 came along, they were just like, fuck it, New 52, that we'll just start everybody over again.
Yeah.
And we're able to sell the Big 7.
That $90 box set of the Big 7, well, the Big 6
that's
plus
DC
Cyborg,
Direct.
DC Direct figure, that,
oh, yeah, right.
that 90 is like the, was the hottest selling item when that came, I think, in October last year.
That was really smart on their part, because that was like, they had a donation to charity.
Yep.
They sold each one of those individually.
Yeah, and then they did new like head sculpts, I think, for the box set. And now they're re-releasing the box set with the head sculpts from the first sold individually. And those are better head sculpts. Like Superman's got like a better haircut and stuff. Yeah. It's crazy.
But then there's the problem of because they both own the license, I'm just sticking with Mattel. I'm not getting the DC Direct.
It seems like you do one or you do the other.
Because the only thing with now they're called DC Collectibles. The only thing I really want this year is the Death of the Family Joker, because I do not see Mattel making him.
Oh, is that? Oh, yeah, I did see that was a Toy Con or whatever, right?
It's gonna be mass retail, but it's gonna come out in the fall. But he's got the chopped off face.
Well, if you really want him in scale, there's a perfect opportunity to do a head swap. Because what's the body really gonna bring?
The body's gonna be that garage,
him in the
mechanic uniform, which he wore through that story. It is cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I think there's definitely something with action figures where it's just like you either, like I said, people either fall out of it. And you're kind of tangentially evolved, or it's like you're committed, and that's, you know, you get, you know, both of you guys get more figures than you get comics.
At my lowest of comics was in the very early 90s. I was only collecting Batman and Detective, and I was collecting Spider-Man because McFarlane was still drawing it.
Yeah.
And I was down to like 2-3 books a month, but I never missed figures. Like every series that came out,
you're always kind of aware of what's coming out.
I'm one of those people where San Diego comes around, I only care about the figure panels.
Yeah, me too. That's really all I follow.
Yeah, the comics, I'm like, well, comics are going to come out every month, and I'm either going to like it or I'm not going to like it.
Right.
You know, I don't get excited about the comic panels. Being there is a different story.
Yeah, like, that's something, like, I don't do any figures, but I read the comics every month, and I don't give a damn what. The only thing I look at is I look at previews when it comes out. I don't rush to the panels at the convention. It's like I was never interested in, Marvel's got Fear Itself coming out. It's like, well, I'll see the solicitations. I'm more interested in what they're doing in Daredevil something else.
And with
else.
You and I, we're going to have a podcast about how you collect. But it seems like you and I are the same, where we get most excited about what omnibuses are coming out and what hardcovers are coming
out.
Yeah,
it's more about like what big collections. I think like the big runs they re-release or they're putting all together.
Yeah, what classic material is going to be in a beautiful archive
format. Yeah,
I feel the same way because I'm so behind on like the current monthlies anyway. I'm really enjoying reading stuff in trade, and I have a store, so I don't really need to own any of this stuff at home.
Right.
The only stuff I'll buy then are these cool collector's editions. You know, I've got those artist editions of Gil Kane Spider-Man or whatever, or John Romita Spider.
Yeah, those are beautiful.
They're huge coffee table books. They're gorgeous. And this is kind of why, to bring us back around, it's kind of why I'm excited, you know, about action figures always, is this is something that, like you said, probably gonna be hard to find again. Yeah. It's this sort of a 3D representation, you know, and these collected editions are memorialized versions of these classic stories that will never not be classic stories.
Right.
And I think that's why that's all I want to take home.
Yeah, you're right. I think that is directly applicable to figures, because it's like, I want that classic version of Bane, and I want that classic version of the Scorpion.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to have this thing that's in stories that I've loved since I was a kid in my hand.
Yeah.
And I want it to
Yeah, I do remember. I mean, I think trying to think back on, like you said, like the classic version of these characters, like something was so satisfying about having that animated Spider-Man animated version of the Scorpion was like, and I've seen 40 different Scorpion action figures or whatever, and I always go back to, no, this was the color scheme I wanted. This was the exact, the sculpt was perfect on this figure.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
So this week, let's do, what is your all-time favorite action figure? The best, this is the number one action figure you've ever collected, that they've ever made, that you may still not own. Carm?
Well, there's so many good ones in terms of paint, in terms of sculpt, the ones I've made that have sentimental value, but I don't think I'll ever find a figure I cherish more than the first Spider-Man toy my dad bought for me. It was that, from that Toy Biz line we mentioned earlier, it had maybe 4 points of articulation. He had suction cups.
I've got
on his
that.
Hands.
Yeah.
The first Marvel Superheroes one.
Didn't he come with like a rubber web, like a black
it
rubber
did.
Web?
It came with a black
and he's
rubber
got like
web.
A, yeah, I got
it
that.
It had
one
a good Romita Senior face, too.
It did.
Had like small eyes. And
they're kind of cool looking. I still have a whole line of them that I keep. You know, I don't display them on a shelf, but that's, I just will never get over how sentimental
that's
that
nostalgia
is
of it. That's like, and
the only reason I care about any of this stuff really is nostalgia. I don't know why, but that's it for me. So there's been some neat figures out there, but that's always going to be it for me.
This is really hard because I've got a top ranking on, like,
you've got
so
5,000 action figures.
I've like my favorite one now, the one I always waited for, but I guess if I go back through everything, my favorite,
like if I took a hammer and destroyed every one of your toys, which
you
one
would never be allowed back in my home,
which one which
and
one
that would
be you
the biggest sanction, you know, that you'd experience.
It's like the end of Dark Knight, your
right
wife or your child, which one?
Right.
Steven, you put that gun down from that black suit of Spider-Man.
You just told me who you valued more.
I would have to say it over everything, probably the Secret Wars Black Spider-Man, because that was the line that got me back into superhero figures after they had been gone since Mego. I just got hardcore into comics, and when Spider-Man came out with the black suit, that got me reading Spider-Man, because I kind of felt like the red and blue was old-fashioned in the same way I felt that Batman was Adam West, because I was like 12 and I was too old for it. And it was a running change in the line. He originally came out in red and blue. And then when the second wave came out, he wasn't even a separate figure. They just switched him to the black costume.
Yeah.
I still have that figure, and he is the loosest figure in the world. He will not stand up.
Yeah. His like legs are just like,
he'll just drop, and there's the thumbprints, which have like worn away the legs on his chest.
Remind me later, and I can tell you how to fix the joint problem.
Yeah, I know the hot glue thing, but... That was also one of the first ones I customized, because he didn't have the white on the backs of his hands,
yeah,
so I painted that
white
in.
Out.
Yeah, and I'll cheat a little bit, because also in that line was the one figure I never found as a kid, which was the Secret Wars Hobgoblin.
Who interestingly enough, wasn't in Secret Wars at all.
No, that's really weird. That's like a sidetrack where Jim Shooter created the Secret Wars comic to promote the figures that were coming out. And then when the figures came out, there were very few people in that. Like,
Daredevil
was a figure.
Hobgoblin.
Falcon was a figure.
Yeah,
and I bet you they didn't do the Molecule Man figure.
No, they did him as a mini-mate. That's the only figure that's ever been made.
Owen Reese, in case anyone wants to know what the Molecule Man's real name is.
I would say that the mini-mates probably have the widest character selection of any Marvel line ever made.
Yeah,
they've been going for 10 years.
They've got everybody.
Yeah.
But it was that one. And the Hobgoblin I did not get until I was like in my late 20s, and eBay had started, and I had a job, and I paid $30.
But you never forgot, did you?
I have both of them. I have them both downstairs.
That's awesome.
Steven, what about you? You're not a collector now.
No, not a collector at all, and this is a figure I've never actually owned. We have it in the store. I don't know. DC Direct, I guess, did this. They did Jack Kirby Fourth World figures.
Oh, yeah. I had those.
Specifically the Orion, which is a character I could give two shits about. Right. But this figure, for anyone that doesn't know, they took, and I thought this was the coolest idea. They were doing like, all right, they'll do like Jack Kirby's version of these characters, or like Michael Turner's version of, and then they do it right off. They'd have that character.
Yeah, there's a Superman in them.
There's a Superman, and the Orion I like specifically because he's got like the little square little fingers, and then I think he's got two heads, one with a helmet, one without, so he's got like this crazy like scarred like, you know, which geometric face. But the coolest thing, and I don't know what's like satisfying about it, it's like the paint job. He's got like, he's like a mix between like red and orange. There's something that's so satisfying about that color. It's like, it's got, it's probably, no, yeah, this is a big deal. It's my favorite color on the planet right now. Is the Orion color.
The red on the Orion?
The Orion, this specific coloring, the shade of red is like, I've never seen that particular color anymore. And I'm partially colorblind, I think. Like, I can't distinguish between like blues and purples. And I think this is the most satisfying color on the planet right now.
We'll have to rebrand the store with that color.
We'll have to. Yeah. That's what I was going for when I picked that red out. When we designed the store, Carm's like red, blue, yellow. And I'm like, all right, let me go get the colors. That's the red I was going for, was this red.
Awesome.
And if you look at it, it's pretty close, but it's not quite right.
My favorite thing about those figures, and I think it's on all of them because they reused the body, was they actually sculpted in the Kirby squiggles. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. It's like,
yeah, like but, the way he would shade.
The only thing that I've seen like it was that Darwin Cook's New Frontier figures.
Those are beautiful, too. Those are so awesome. Bunch of those.
Yeah.
Used the Superman from that Fourth World line. I'm working on a Jack Kirby Thor because I've got first appearance versions of everybody but Thor. So I took that Superman. He needs a little work. I got to find some hair that I like for him because he has long hair. But otherwise, it's going to be awesome.
That's what I'm saying. It's so cool. And that's what Marvel doesn't do at all. They just, all right, well, here's just a bunch of figures. And DC Direct really did a good job of doing these.
Even Mattel doesn't do it.
No one does.
Both Marvel and Mattel, they made a couple of body types. Yeah. And then they switch up the costume and give it new heads.
That's what that box that we mentioned earlier, those Justice League figures are Jim Lee designs.
Yep.
You know, and there's been some great ones like the Darwin Cook and Jack Kirby ones, but there's been some horrendous ones. Michael Turner's are
those
terrible.
Look awful.
And I used to think like, oh, that's how you can tell an artist isn't really good if it doesn't translate into 3D. But then they did the Frank Quietly All-Star Superman.
Those are horrible.
And he looks like Frankenstein. It looks terrible.
Some guys just don't have a style that translates well.
Yeah. You know, and then a lot of it gets lost in the sculpting.
The Mignola
too.
Figures look awesome.
Did they do action figures?
They've done like Hellboy figures.
Oh, the Mezco Hellboy stuff is gorgeous. I have that whole line.
They're so fucking cool. Because the style he draws where you look at this figure and you're thinking like, am I holding something 2D or 3D? I don't even know
The only
anymore.
Thing I've ever seen is that Batman black and white statue. And I think to this day, it's still
the best. They've re-released that like
twice.
Two or three times. Yeah.
And it's still the best-selling one. And it's something, if you look at it dead on, it looks flat.
Yep.
And that's to do something in 3D, to draw it.
That looks 2D.
And then to sculpt it, I mean, the sculptor should get like an Eisner or something for that.
As always, you can follow me on Twitter at NotInMyBook. Please like the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page. Go to our iTunes and leave us a rating. We've gotten a few ratings, but they've all been 5 stars. So that's been
Please love us.
Really happy. We're desperate need of attention. Don't forget the Chimera Comics, and you have an announcement about that?
Yes, that's right. I'd like to let everyone know we're going to open our second location in Oak Lawn, Illinois, across the street from Village Hall at 5307 West 95th Street. We're going to be open May 4th for Free Comic Book Day.
Woo!
Should be pretty cool, and I've got some good stuff planned for our grand opening celebration in June.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!